call to order the 1,296th meeting of the WMATA Board of Directors. The first item we have before us is approval of the agenda. I am recommending one modification of the agenda, and that is to remove the item 6A1. That item, if you approve, will be removed and referred to the Budget Committee for its first meeting. Is there any other discussion on the agenda?
Madam Chairman, if we can remove items 2 and 3, then I think we can go home.
No, because I have a motion here for an executive session, Mr. Zimmerman. Without exception, then, that item will be referred to the Budget Committee, and I would move that we approve the agenda.
Second.
Second, and without exception, then it's so ordered. We have approval of the minutes of July 21st. Is there any discussion of the minutes, any modifications, changes, corrections? Hearing none, then I would move that we approve the minutes. Second, without discussion, then the minutes will be approved. We have a public comment period, and we have, as I understand, one person who has signed up to be heard, and that is Mr. Wendell Wolf.
My name is Wendell Wolf. I live in the District of Columbia, and I have several comments about Metro Rail. The first comment is about signage. I think the signs when the trains come should be on the street level rather than at the, except for the, where the transfer stations. If you know, like when late at night, if the train doesn't come for 10 minutes, you should be able to, before you even go into the station, you should find out if it's going to come in 10 minutes. If it doesn't come right away, that you can take a cab to get to your destination better, rather than going into the station, scanning your card and finding out the train doesn't come for 10 minutes. You can get to your destination faster. That's the first item. I live near the Van Ness station, and transfer sometimes the bus to the subway, and I would appreciate it if you put an escalator on the west side where the bus stops, rather than having to walk down those three sets of stairs. And the third thing is about the Van Ness station itself. Van Ness Street is about two blocks where the escalators are. You pass VZ Terrace, and even the elevator is closer to the thing. And I would prefer that most of the stations have regions where neighborhoods where I would like to see the station be renamed the Forest Hills UDC station. Now the fourth thing is adding to the zoo is although the zoo is a little bit closer to the Woodley Park station, when you're traveling south, if you're from Bethesda or Rockville, I think it would be better to get off at the Cleveland Park Station and walk to the zoo from there because it's a little bit faster. Now, the fifth thing is in Halloween, I would appreciate it if you'd extend the hours of Metro service until about 1:30 on the 1st of November, 1:30 or 2. And I'm just wondering when you're going to build that tunnel between the Farragut stations. And I just, for people who shop at White Flint Mall, like you did at New York Avenue, you added a station there. If you could add a station right underneath that feeds directly underneath the mall, I think it'd be having the mall would have a lot more customers, and it'd be a lot better rather than going to the White Flint station or walking from the Grosvenor station. They are walking from the White Flint station that's currently there. I think it would be better that better serve the public. The people who shop at the mall would have a lot better way of getting to the mall if you put a station there. And my 7 comments about Metro Rail.
Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. Wolf. Some of these issues have been discussed many times over a number of years.
Well, they have all of them?
Not all of them, some of them.
Not all of them, but some of them.
Some of them have, yes.
Yeah, some of them have.
Right. Mr. Zimmerman?
A couple of these are interesting. Well, they're all interesting, but the first one is something that we have had some conversations about, and I just want to say I agree. I wouldn't say rather. I think there should be information about train arrival wherever you might need it. It's amazing to me that I can walk in. Well, I can't walk into a restaurant without seeing TV screens everywhere I look. But we've got a few information displays in just a few little places we've put them. And if you go to major stations like Metro Center, you know, there's one you can see if you're standing right in the middle where we're actually trying to move people away from. But a number of members, Mr. Tangalini's not here today, but he's talked about, you know, the need to have this information before you go through the gate. And I agree that having some information like that above, particularly at stations where you have connections with buses, would be a really good idea. I think that's something we ought to be pursuing. A couple of these are in stations that are not in my jurisdiction, so I will leave those for other people to comment on, although the tunnel connection, which obviously has system-wide implications, is something, again, that the manager can speak to, but it's one of the things we have been looking at. It's among the larger capital projects we'd like to be able to do. As for moving a station...
Stop on that, Mr. Zimmerman, for a moment. I believe that's funded. Isn't that is not funded?
No, the connectors, those would be funded under the Davis bill.
Okay.
The answer to that is help us get the funding.
Exactly.
And,
right.
Get the bill passed and the state and local governments take the other actions, and we can do that. But I also was intrigued by the notion of moving the station under White Flint Mall. And I'll confess I don't really know that station. Don't know White Flint Mall real well. But if you guys figure out, I see Mr. Salpeas over there, how you could move that station there. I've got a few I'd like to move. In fact, I'd like the whole blue line under Columbia Pike, where it was supposed to go in the first place, if you figure that one out. Thank you.
Ms. Zimmerman, I would also like to comment on the signage. I have, along with you, had issues over the years with the signage, and I have a couple of ideas that I will be talking to someone about. I know that signage is awfully expensive, but I think we can do more, and I'm very interested in pursuing that. So, thank you. All right. Report by the general manager, Mr. White.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. Good to see you today. My board digest is in front of you. I'll touch on the first 3 or 4 items. They're all related to the same theme, which is security and emergency preparedness. September is actually a National Emergency Preparedness Month. This is a nationwide effort supported by the Department of Homeland Security and the American Red Cross to help get the message out to all of our citizens for awareness and preparedness in the event of emergencies. There'll be a kickoff launch to the month on September 1st here locally at Union Station, where Secretary Chertoff will be a part of an event that'll be a day-long event. It'll take place at Union Station as sort of the national launch with a local location to this National Emergency Preparedness Month. There's also a major effort that's going on at COG that has been long in the development, which is this major regional educational effort for citizen emergency preparedness. Some of you who have kind of participated through the COG process might recall there was a fairly sizable sum of money in excess of $4.5 million that had been approved in previous Urban Area Security Initiative UIC grants to conduct this regional campaign for our citizens to help create this level of awareness for them. The COG process has hired Burston Marsteller, who is the prime contractor, to help conduct this effort. That also will be launched during next month. Their goal is to increase to 50% the number of the residents in our national capital region who are prepared, and that's going to be determined by a post-campaign survey that COG intends to do. Obviously, this major effort is to act as a complement, not as a substitution, to all the various local emergency preparedness campaigns and programs that are already going on around this region through local government. Also, during this month and actually occurring now, we want to take advantage of this opportunity to kind of refresh our own internal capabilities with our workforce. I think it's kind of timely now to try to really reinvigorate the training efforts with our workforce around emergency preparedness. In particular, there are a couple of special things that we are now launching. Well, first, we will continue the employee orientation training that has been ongoing, that has this component of training in it. We actually introduced this issue of emergency preparedness training pretty much coming out of the Atlanta bombings that occurred, of course, well in advance of the 9/11, and then has been continued ever since then. So we will make sure that we are looking at that module as being as reinvigorated as it possibly can be. We have been using lately an excellent training tool that has come out of the National Transit Institute. It's a recommended national training tool that's come out of research and training and development money. It's a 19-minute video that is specially created for transit employees inside of the transit environment, which provides some very good and practical information for employees on how to look for, report on, and act on suspicious behavior and unattended packages. We are creating a special operations-wide, what I'll call retraining program, targeted at touching all 8,000 of our operations employees. It's specially designed right around this this very issue of being contemporary and up to date on what to do, what to look for, to be active and to be proactive in responding and to be responsive to issues that are brought to their attention by citizens and by customers. We expect that largely all of our operations employees will have undergone this training by the month of September. A good number of them will have been touched before Labor Day, and as we catch up with people's leave schedules and things of that nature, we expect that everybody will have been caught up with by the end of September. And I think it's a timely initiative. I know it's received a lot of attention. It's been carefully developed between the operations department, the safety department, and the police department. The police department is actually participating in these training efforts, and I know our frontline employees especially value that. In addition, the police department has also developed and is offering internal to the organization specially trained programs. It's called Terrorist Activity Recognition and Reaction. This program is also getting a lot of attention inside of the organization, a lot of interest for people to be given some more tools on how to help do their job better. And in addition, the police department is now, I think, well underway with a very good effort that's called Managing Metro Emergencies, which is a special outreach effort that we have that is directed to largely first responders who would be coming upon a metro scene, fire departments, police departments, and public works employees. 700 have been through this program already. There's about 1,500 in total that we want to make sure we catch up with in the next 60 days. And the target here is not all police officers and all firefighters, but largely around the target incident commanders, the people who have to come in, or their backfills that have to actually take ownership of a particular location, go through the incident command process and make decisions. We want them to be aware of corollary metro issues. It's now not just how do you approach the metro system and safely perform your duties inside of the metro system, but as we know, there are lots of corresponding spin-off effects, particularly if stations got shut down or parts of the system get shut down, that put a lot of our customers topside, that creates a lot of chaos and confusion with respect to pedestrian movements, vehicular movements, and the safe and orderly movement of people and the priority attention for the bus system. So this training is largely directed to try to help take advantage of the first responder assistance that we will get from our local first responders, but also not only to provide assistance for people who are engaged in the system, but for people who are also brought out of the system to help them out. So we think all of these efforts are going to pay some particularly good dividends. There are a lot of things that go on in the system on a regular basis. I mean, there are 20,000 items that we get sent into lost and found on an annual basis, more than 1,500 separate things every single month. So there's a lot of stuff that gets left behind. And differentiating between those that are unattended and those that are suspicious, and to make sure that our employees and our response procedure is as good as they can be so that we don't unnecessarily interrupt our service delivery But at the same time, we take appropriate and prudent response to those things that warrant that kind of response. Finally, during the month of September, there will be two separate hearings focusing on transit security. On September 16th is a Metro-specific hearing that I and Chief Hansen have been asked to participate with the District of Columbia's Committee on Public Works and the Environment, chaired by Mrs. Schwartz. And then probably the week after that, the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs will be holding a hearing on transit security targeted to the transit operator community that I believe Metro will be invited to attend. I'd just like to finish up with a reminder that effective tomorrow, a premium parking policy goes in effect with for people who are using our two stations adjacent to the FedEx field, the $25 premium charge for that. There'll be the first time that that'll be in effect with the preseason game tomorrow against the Cincinnati Bengals. We're really trying to do our best job to get that information out there, to have enough Metro support personnel on scene to help people out, but we do know that certainly in the early stages of this, there'll be some amount of confusion as we try and work towards that, and we're trying to minimize the potential for that happening. One last item I'd like to just report to you, because this will take place also before our next September board meeting, which is on September 7th, we'll be able to launch the 4 mile CNG bus facility with Mr. Zimmerman and some others. We'll be actually launching the inauguration of that particular service and the introduction of our first CNG buses into service out of that Northern Virginia bus garage. Madam Chair, that concludes my report, and I'd be happy to address any questions or concerns that the board has.
Great. Thank you, Mr. White. Any questions of Mr. White? Okay. Then that moves us to our administrative actions. The first action now before us is the contract for IT software infrastructure upgrade. I will move adoption.
Which item is this? Is this two?
This is number two, right.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We have any discussion?
I think we should, just to justify being here.
I agree, Mr. Zimmerman.
Nice to tell me about then. This. At least the people over here should hear what it is.
Mrs. Alpaz, you want to tell us what it is?
This is IDSV, that's the Information Technology Department, the upcoming to upgrade the 48 servers they have and consolidate them to a smaller number of servers. It's part of the annual program to upgrade their environments. And also, they're going to provide for a tendency. They're going to have a fault tolerance capabilities, and they're going to increase the electronic file storage. And a very significant here is that the external auditors requested that we provide for disasters recovery, and this system is going to allow for that. And also, they buy, with this contract, they're going to buy the installation management approach and the configuration support they need to get it to a smaller number of servers.
This stuff belongs on consent calendar because there's just no way to make software sound interesting.
I was talking
about all the time. I appreciate that it is vitally important and you have to do it. It just never sounds interesting.
I agree.
You already have a motion?
We have a motion and a second, and I'll call for a vote. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. Our next and last item is modify lease for additional Metro Access office space. Mr. Zimmerman, you want to make a motion?
Sure, but first let me ask, tell me why you really need this.
This is in order to provide for an orderly transition to our new paratransit service contractor. The operation is housed over in our Silver Spring building. It occupies a floor. We know there's going to be a transition when this takes place. Obviously, there's a whole lot of a service that gets provided out of that location. We want to be able to ensure a successful startup of the new contractor and the decommissioning of the existing contract and provide for the ability for the new contractor to, you know, take occupancy as soon as possible to gear up for this. At the same time, we don't want to hold on to this space any longer than we need to, and there is a proviso that we can opt out of the space, although it's a part of a current lease agreement that is multi-year in nature and doesn't expire until September of 2009, with written notice to the landlord by March of 2006, we can then opt out and just pay for what would be unamortized costs of a tenant improvement allowance, $60,000 of improvement for carpeting and a few things of that nature. We would just pay about $43,000 of that and would opt out of that space, which we would intend to do.
I just want to understand, this is the part I was clear on. You're basically, the new folks will basically move into new space and be able to start up fresh, essentially. And so you move them into the new space. And
contractor.
Then, right. And then when they take over, basically the operation gets shifted over there like this.
Correct.
As opposed to moving people in and out of.
Well, for the most part, that's correct. I'm sure there will be some transitional startup and decommissioning issues. But theoretically, Mr. Zimmerman, yes, one day the service is provided by one set of personnel, and then the next day.
The location in the next place.
One floor versus another floor.
And what happens to the space they leave behind?
Well, it'll go back to the landlord, who would then, remarket the space.
I get that.
We won't be needing it.
Move approval, Madam Chair.
The motion and second.
Yes,
and Mr. Smith is first. You're next, and then Mr.
I understand in the narrative that there was consideration given to using space at Pensy Drive. But because we need a telephone switch installed there, the cost of that was too extensive. When did we buy Pensy Drive?
When did we actually acquire it? Three?
Well, longer than that. Five years ago?
Five.
I understand, too, that the lease doesn't... the current lease does not expire until 2009. Are there no escape clauses from that lease?
For all of the space that we lease out of there?
Yes, there are. There are escape clauses, but you have to pay the unamortized cost of the broker's fee that they incurred for leasing the space to WMATA and any unamortized build-out costs for all three floors.
Do you know if you order back to those costs?
Not offhand, but we could get them.
Okay. Interesting to see, given my experience, we've got a vast, this whole operation needs to be here. Place that we own.
Well,
the cost of keeping the lease.
Well, I'd have two answers to that question. First, obviously, the occupancy of this space preceded Pensy Drive. Second, we're about 78% occupied at the Pensy Drive or the Carmen Turner facility right now. There are one or two significant functions that once they've moved in there will occupy the remainder of that space. The biggest is additional movement that's going out of the Bladensburg bus garage into that location. It's taken us some time to conjure up the necessary funds to complete that action. You approved that in the last capital program to complete all the transactions so that we can make those movements in. We're now going to contract to get that under contract, and our current occupancy estimate is December of 2006 to have that space filled up, and that will be by far the largest amount of unused space today.
At that juncture, there won't be 5,000 feet of space left at Pensy Drive. So,
I don't believe there'll be much, if any, space that would not have been occupied by that point in time. I don't know, Bill, if you have anything else to say about that.
No, I don't. Except that we are hiring someone to address the issue of space at Pensy Drive.
Yeah, we don't really have a full-time on-site space manager, if you will, for the use of that space on a regular and ongoing basis. And as a result, I think despite the best of intentions, some of what has happened to date has been what first tenants have done as they have occupied the building. And I've assigned to Bill the responsibility for, as a part of some of the overall administrative issues that Bill is now managing inside of the organization, to have that capability on staff and to make sure that we've totally sorted out, not only at that location, but all of our locations, this building and every other location, the use of our space to make sure that it is full and complete and it's used in the best manner. and that it is also done in the most cost-effective manner. So I'm looking to kind of see the results of what Bill will come up with once he has that capability on board and built up. And, you know, if we find out by looking at all of our various real estate issues, and we will certainly put the issue that you're speaking of here, Mr. Smith, as a part of that equation of not just taken for given that we've got a lease that's going to go through 2009 without questioning or reexamining that, we will do that as we update our review of all of our space and its use.
I appreciate that, and I think that continuing on the Pensy Drive issue, I mean, I would suggest that even so much as space is designated or quote-unquote occupied there, that we need to take a second look at that possibly, because in the terms or the times that I've toured that facility, I note there's a considerable amount of space dedicated to training, and training is fine, but, I think we can piggyback some of the training possibly, because it seemed to me that a lot of times a lot of the training rooms were empty. And so we need to do better scheduling of the training within space and then better utilize the extra space as opposed to having a lot of space designated for training. With that, I will vote for the motion at this time.
Ian.
Just so I understand, this is a call taker operation. That somebody calls in for their needed a metro access fan. They call in, the call taker takes it, and they dispatch it. Is that what we're doing?
That is that. Well, plus our own staff who manages the Metro Access program is located in there as well as all of the planning and reservation and operations management work that's done by the contractor.
Well, I don't understand why it takes, according to this, it could take up to 4 years to run a parallel operation.
No, we're expecting it to be the goal now is to have this new contract awarded by mid-January of next year. We're hoping to get to you by next month the staff's contract recommendation. And then we need to have a new contractor in place by roughly the middle of January, which is what we're shooting for, because that's the end of this second and last option period, I forget how many options we had on it, but the last option period with the existing contractor, and we want to make sure that we've got some overlap time because there is some technology that's got to work and be debugged, and we want to make sure that we have successfully moved to the new contractor and all systems are go and that they're working properly, and then we would disengage out of the other space, and we would make sure that no later than March of 2006 we would unoccupy one floor.
Not chosen a contract.
No, next month we're hoping to make a recommendation to you next month.
How do you know we have to run a parallel system? Because the RFP here says this may involve providing a parallel reservation system. It doesn't say it shall.
Well, we know that the current incumbent has not bid on the contract.
Whoever's coming in doesn't necessarily have to run a parallel system, too.
That's all their employees are now managing that. They're taking the phone calls. They're doing the supervision, the management, the planning. The current contractor, Logisticare, this is Logisticare's employees that are located in this building.
I understand that, but you want to run another floor for another contractor to bring the same operation in. When we get rid of Logisticare, can't we just move into the space they occupied and the same thing? And I noticed that we're also requiring an off-the-shelf system. I mean,
we're going to have
all this stuff ahead of time and just be able to turn the switch. I mean, it's not like our payroll system. I noticed you did. I mean. This is through a contractor, right?
That is correct.
And they're required to do that, not WMATA.
That is correct. The problem, however, is that they will have to rely upon a multiplexing phone system that located at Silver Spring to duplicate that with. After speaking with New Jersey. Those who have not had contractors co-located have lived to regret it. Software, which about real live data, starting to run that data through to do.
But why is this authority obligated to spend that money? Why isn't that part of the contractor?
We could have made part of it. There are certain things I think we would prefer to be.
According to the RFP, it says it may, so you might have a bidder coming in that was willing to provide that elsewhere.
We actually asked.
I mean, this operation could actually be run out of Pakistan, right?
We actually asked. Look at alternative sites. Best way to make sure that there's no disruption of service is to be co-located for testing. That was something that, without exception, they all told us.
Well, us to pick up that.
Mark it up.
Us to control the situation rather than rely on them to do so.
All right. How old is our telephone switch here?
How old? Around the late 1999. Going into 2000. It came on just before all of Y2K.
Plans to replace that?
No, not at the present time. The switch at Silver Spring is very good switch. It's pretty much state of the art.
Here.
Oh, in this building? That I think is a question that I think system maintenance has looked at that issue, and I need to defer to my colleagues on the issue of the switch for this building.
My understanding after several discussions earlier since when I first got here that it needs to be replaced. This might be the time to roll all that in and move this operation to Pensy Drive. You know, I'm just not sure we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand, Mr. White. You said this agency of 10,000 plus employees does not have a space planner employed.
We do not have a centralized space planning. It's decentralized, Mr. Deegan.
Not have a space planner employed in at WMATA. That's a yes or no.
Not one. We have several that do it as a part. Not who has the only distinct responsibility to do that. Now it's done as a part of other responsibilities at certain locations in a decentralized manner. We do have a capability that exists for this building, but only for this building.
We have a space planner for the Jackson Graham building.
Yes, correct, Bill.
That's correct.
You have one person.
We have one for like Pensy Drive.
Not for the field locations. No.
I don't know. I just think we might be doing something smarter than approving this today. But I don't have any further questions.
Ms. Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Follow up on my colleague's question about Pensy Drive. This is the first time I've heard that 78% occupied. And I've been involved in some meetings where we've been talking about opening up a backup operations center there. Is the remaining 22%, the operations center included in that 22%, or you're not contemplating moving a backup operations center to Pensy Drive?
Oh, no, we still intend, Mr. Solomon, to have that as our backup capability. As you know, it's not a fully funded and in-place capability, but the space has been designated, and there is some equipment that is there today.
So in that 78% occupied, the backup operation facility is designated in that 78%?
I believe that's the case. I'm just recalling 78% based upon some previous analysis that was done on that. I don't recall whether that fit into that. So, I mean, I would, in order to be entirely accurate with you, I'd like to kind of follow up if I could just to make sure where we've designated that. I believe it's inside the 78, but I don't know for sure.
But on your space management initiatives going forward, I mean, we all hope that we get the funding at some point for that backup operations center, so we just won't have one, you know, main brain of the whole system. So we want to keep some space at least at Pensy Drive because it's such a big facility.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's the plan, and we don't plan to change it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have some questions about this action myself. I'm quite uneasy about it, and I guess my first question is, how many floors do we currently have in this Silver Spring location?
Occupy two, no, three.
Well, three floors currently.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be a fourth floor. And I'm assuming that each of those floors rents for about
$225,000? Yeah, that's correct.
We have three now, and this additional one would be four.
Right.
So we're spending $750,000 a year now, and with this one, we'd be spending $1 million for this space a year. And I guess we've been there, I don't know how long, so we've spent many millions already. It seems to me that this should have been looked at. Pensy Drive should have been looked at to see the extent to which it could accommodate this operation, given what an expensive just space costs we're faced with here. That's my one point. My second point is this amendment that you're asking us to approve today, when would it become effective?
October 1st.
Okay, but we don't expect a letter contract until February. January.
We're hoping that we will come in January and issue an NTP by the end of, in September and issue an NTP by the end of September.
Mrs. Mack, if I might add to that, too, the activities of the contract. Their activities well before January 15th. Oh, date, but it will take.
Well, when do we expect to sign this contract?
September 23rd.
That's the bidding's all done. We're going through the evaluation, and we would sign a contract on September 23rd. And you're saying that it
after the board meetings, should the board approve the staff's recommendation, our intent is to immediately sign the contract that day or the next day, because we're already up against the wall from a timing point of view for the transition that is strongly recommended in order to ensure these things are very difficult to move from one transition to another.
Of course.
And it is fraught with difficulties.
Sure. So beginning October, we'd start the prep for the transition. And we would expect the transition to occur in January. Is that the schedule we're on? Now, I also understand that our estimate is that we would need this floor that we're now talking about for only until around the end of March, but that the lessor is requiring us to lease the space through December. Just, I guess, as a business deal for him, a business gesture. So we would expect to have 6 months when this space is really not being effectively used or not really needed. And I'm concerned that it is being added to the lease that doesn't expire until 2009. And I see the clause that allows us to exit out at the end of December. And I guess, as a minimum, I would ask the maker of the motion if he would accept. I think you make the motion. If
so,
if he would accept a condition that there be no renewal of this, that we do exercise this option to exit this lease, this portion of the lease, by December 31st.
Not my permission you need. You need the unanimous consent of the board.
Okay.
You will have mine.
Okay. All right. Good. Then that's what, and I guess I would ask the board for unanimous consent to amend the motion in that manner. I have to say, though, I am still very, very uneasy about this move. We talked about Pensy Drive. Everyone who has been to Pensy Drive is impressed with the enormous size of that facility. And I have to agree with Mr. Smith that if we were planning, if we're still planning on how to use Pensy Drive, as evidenced by the question asked by Mr. Solomon, maybe we could plan, this could be part of one of the planning components, and we may find out how to save ourselves millions of dollars, because this, while this contract we're doing now is just for a year or a year and a half, we're still talking roughly $1 million a year to rent this space on into 2009 and beyond. So I just think we really do need to go back to the drawing board on this. And it seems that we're up against a time crunch. So I guess we need to go forward with this motion, which I'll ask for votes on in a minute. But and then I guess I'll have an additional recommendation. So Mr. Zimmerman and then Mr. Deegan.
This all seems to be a proxy for a whole different discussion. I mean, this has to be done, and, you know, we could have approved this half an hour ago because that's what we're going to do. There obviously is interest in whether we are maximizing the use of the space that we own. It seems to me that a presentation and discussion on that is the appropriate subject for discussion at some committee, whichever one it might be. And, you know, we ought to be looking at that, and we ought to have easily either explain to us that, yes, in fact, we are maximizing the use of what we own and we're only leasing what's necessary, or there are opportunities to consolidate and here's what we're going to do. If in fact, it's not clear to me at all whether the Turner facility really does have, you know, some marginal space that it will be practical to use in the next few years or not, I would like to know that. If it is, then that's great. That'll turn out to be one more great advantage of having acquired the Turner facility in the first place. And let me say that as one who was one of the original skeptics, along particularly with Mrs. Mack,
yes,
when that sort of fell into our lap, that I have had to admit that it was a wise move that was recommended by the management at the time to acquire that facility. The value is clearly far beyond what we paid for it, if only because of the tremendous growth in real estate value. It's good we acquired stuff sooner. We probably would like to have acquired some other things sooner in retrospect if we could have. But also it has proved its value in a number of ways, most particularly in providing the only real site for, you know, certain types of training for emergencies, which are now being used by other agencies, as I understand it, for precisely the kind of situations that we've been so concerned about over the last couple months and read about in other places, a point that's often missed. It is an extraordinarily large facility because we didn't design it for our purposes. It was what somebody else built and went out of business, and there it was on the market, and so we got it. And we shouldn't lose sight of all that. And if it turns out there's 30,000 square feet of it that we can use for some activity like this, that's just great, and we ought to do so. But that's a fairly small little item in the grand scheme of things, and there's a much bigger picture here. So I would suggest we get this one out of our way and have the larger discussion where we have an opportunity to explore those issues that clearly members are interested in.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Mr. Deegan and then Ms. Hudgens.
Obviously, none of us are happy with this. I guess my only comment is I think it's unconscionable that we're spending $23 a foot on lease space, where I know plenty of properties in Prince George's County you can come a lot cheaper than that, and Pensy Drive is free to us. And I think that's where we should have looked to start with when this started. And I'm just very uncomfortable with it.
Ms. Hudgens.
Thank you, and I think the discussion has been helpful, but I think it's focused on two different pieces, and one is, I guess my focus is on why is this amendment needed, and I understand it's needed in order to provide a space for the subsequent contract to have a facility available that will allow us to move into the Metro Access contract immediately and hopefully with little interruption. Now, as I read the narrative here, it says $1 million that, first of all, the location was for Penn State Drive was evaluated, and the downside of moving there was not a space issue, but the $1 million cost in order to provide that phone service, or the quality of phone service that the contract would need.
That was probably the biggest barrier, yes.
And if we were able to overcome the barrier, the assumption would be that we would have the space in Penn State Drive. But is it the financial cost to move forward in, one, providing the $1 million for upgraded phone service, and are there other costs that would be a part of the front end of that contract to have the services available for a cutover?
I'll answer one of the questions that you asked. I'll ask Pamela to try and chime in on the other ones. We don't know right now that we have this kind of space down at Penn State Drive that would not be dislocating another use or planned use of that space until we do a better job of getting our arms around every square foot of the space that's being used. So we can't answer that question right now, and that's what Bill's going to be helping us to evaluate. As it stands, all of that space is used or is planned to be used largely when the remainder of the bus maintenance function gets moved in there, which is the biggest unoccupied space right now. There are questions about how effectively utilized is the training space. The training was one of the largest reasons why we recommended buying that location. I mean, there's a lot of our training work, our blue-collar technical types of training work that's down there. But we do need to more carefully evaluate the kinds of questions about how regularly are the classrooms utilized, you know, how coordinated are the classroom schedules, and all the amount of space that's used for that purpose. And, you know, we will be following up on that as soon as we possibly can. As it pertains to questions related to other costs of transfer or relocation, Pamela, I don't know whether you're able to answer that.
Decided that spending $1 million for a need of the transition. If you remember, I got this job in March and started this investigation immediately. Other costs might have been attended upon.
Thank you. I guess the concerns that have been raised are very important, but they sort of parallel a different discussion, and that is the need for us to be able to ongoing better plan and monitor, one, the space that we have and the cost that it affects the agency. I guess the other concern that I have here is that we have a contract that is coming close to an end that we indeed want to make some important changes to. And I hope that we don't lose sight of that part of it and that we can deal with the space issue, I think, in a larger sense of what we need to do. I do agree that it is unfortunate that we don't have ongoing and was not part of the agency. The space planning issue, it is just a natural that I'm familiar with, but it is this issue seems to have taken us in a more immediate direction, and it's unfortunate. It's maybe the only way we can resolve it.
I just, okay, just your last chance, Mr. Diggin.
I just can't let it go. The switch currently here, the telephone switch, needs to be replaced. Is there anybody over there that disagrees with that?
You're talking about the question about this building,
yeah.
Correct?
So I understand it's tied to Carmen Turner.
All of the switches are networked and linked together.
Yeah.
All the telephone switches are linked together.
I'm going to need to buy a telephone switch anywhere. And this operation can be put in South Dakota and run without much problem, right?
Why do you keep sending our jobs somewhere else?
Well, at least he's in the country this time.
I'm in a country. I'm just saying the fact.
What is this?
Gordon, I appreciate you want us in that high-dollar area of Silver Spring, but there's no need to spend $23 a square foot for space for a call taker.
At Prince George's, that was still fine.
No, well, that's fine.
But keep sending to Pakistan, South. Where's next going to be outside?
But it's half the cost of what we're spending if you locate it in Prince George's. And if we went to Pensy Drive, it wouldn't cost you a dime. You already own it.
I'm not arguing with that. You keep raising other locations. So.
Okay.
And my final question on this.
I'm just saying this is not a we're making this to be a real complicated thing to take a phone call and dispatch a driver. I just can't see it.
My final question is this funded in the, this will be funded in the fiscal 2006 budget, I assume. So this adds, is it already in there, what we've seen already, or this, does this add another cost that we have not seen?
We believe, based upon the recent performance in the most recent budget, and based upon our evaluation of the bids, that we will be. Remember, we didn't have any idea what the new contract was going to cost. Now we have a better idea, and we're honing in on that. And this fiscal year is 6 months of the old contract and 6 months of the new contract. So what Pamela is saying is, we do believe that we've got an adequate amount of budget authority built into the budget that you have adopted to be able to accommodate this.
Okay. All right. Then we're ready to vote. Those in favor of now, do I have an amendment motion, Mr. Zimmerman?
Unanimous consent.
Oh, we got unanimous consent. All right. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Okay. Now that we have succeeded in spending as much time talking about two items as we would have talking about a whole notebook full, I would ask for right, Mrs. Zimmerman, we didn't want, right. Do we have any report from Northern Virginia?
That would be Ms. Hutchins.
I have nothing.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Hutchins. Sorry about that. We have no report from D.C. And Mr. Deegan, do we have a report from WSDC?
No report.
No report, then I move that the board adjourn to executive session to discuss contractual matters. The second, and without exception, it is so ordered, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.